Keep knowledge, not learning. So, that's what these guys in the church are saying, that it's truth.
Everything about their life is completely auspicious. Their birth, their activities, and their disappearance. In the case of Gauravani Swami Maharaj, he was born, his biography is mentioned here, he was born in 1926 in Cuttack, in a village by the name of Jagannathpura. And his family, he comes from a family line of great Kirtaniers that are absorbed in chanting bhajans in the holy name of Krishna, specifically coming in a line of Narottam Das Thakur. And as Prabhu was mentioning, when he met Srila Prabhupada, he said, I want Gaura and Govinda. Because he was born in a tradition of Gauranga Bhakti, and he was worshipping Gopinath. There's a picture of his deity here. This is his family deity. I believe it's Gopinath. Gopinath is you. And he's presently his disciples are building a temple in that village. He was born in a family of devotees, and was a devotee throughout his whole life. And when he left this world, because he spent his whole life, as Pandit Prabhu said, just living in Krishna consciousness. And when he left this world in the holy Dham of Mayapur. He was born in a village called Jagannathpura. And he was a bhakta of Lord Jagannath. But he had the same vision of Lord Jagannath that Lord Chaitanya had of Lord Jagannath. He saw Lord Jagannath as Pujendranandan Krishna. And before he would give class, he would recite many wonderful prayers before Gauravinda Swami Maharaj gave class. And one of them he mentioned, he revealed some of his, this is a prayer, he didn't say where it's from, but it's, this is a collection of prayers that they would recite before they give class, and they published a small book. Paramananda he Madhava, Padun Galuchi Makaranda, Se Makaranda Panakari, Anande Bolo Hari Hari, Harinka Nami Bandavela, Hari Karive Chakadola, Se Chakadolanka Payare, Manamo Rahu Narantare, Manamo Narantare Rahu, Ha Krishna Bhali Jiva Jo, Ha Krishna Bhali Jo Jiva, Mote Udara Radha Dava, Mote Udara Radha Dava, Mote Udara Radha Dava. Translation. This, in other words, he picked out this particular prayer because it exemplifies the inner bhav of Gauravinda Swami Maharaj. The nectar is coming from your lotus feet. Drinking that nectar, chant, Hari Bol, Hari Bol, with pleasure. Prepare a vessel in the name of Hari. Chakadola. Chakadola is the name for Jagannath. Chakadola, Lord Jagannath, who has very large, round eyes. Lord Jagannath will ferry me across this ocean of material existence. Let my mind always be fixed at the lotus feet of that Chakadola. Let my mind always be there at the time of leaving my body. Let my tongue chant, O Krishna, O Radha Dava, you please deliver me from this ocean. We first met Gauravinda Swami Maharaj in 1987 in Philadelphia. Yeah, it was the first time he'd ever come to America. And we were sitting in our room in one part of the temple and he was somewhere else, he had given class. And we didn't really think it was a big sannyasi and we were small sannyasi. At the time, 1987. And we didn't expect to actually meet him. We figured he was busy with his life and meeting people and whatnot. So somehow his disciple came and said, Maharaj wants to see you. So we went there and we paid a basis and we went to Maharaj. Then he said, so you're a sannyasi? Well, I mean, carrying this danda. And then he said, wait, what is your name? And he was very, very, the point I'm making is he went out of his way to find out about me, to show his compassion and concern for me, and ended up spending 2 hours speaking to me. and giving me very many instructions about sannyas and devotional service in general. But the main point of the meeting was that I was impressed how this an unknown person, he came to the temple and he said, "Oh, I'm here, you're a sannyasi, I want to know you, if you need any help, I'm here, I'll be here for a few days, you please come every day and you meet with me." It was rather unusual because we hadn't had this experience before. So this is one aspect that he was very, very friendly and concerned with everyone, wherever he went. Another aspect that impressed us about Gaura-Govinda Swami Maharaj was the fact that he very much studied Prabhupada's books. Because we know that as we study more deeply Prabhupada's books, they're full of quotations from the acharyas. Prabhupada's purports is simply one sloka or one tika after another, grouped together in a beautiful way, and then imbued with Prabhupada's devotional ecstasy. And that's what makes the Bhaktivedanta purport. So what happens is, the Srila Prabhupada's purports are actually sutras. So if you have the key to the safe, you open the safe and you can pour out all the jewels. So if you have sufficient knowledge and experience of all the Goswami granthas and scriptures, when you read Prabhupada's purports, you can unlock them. They're sutras, they're compressed knowledge. You can unlock those purports and draw out so many wonderful gems of bhakti. And that is one of the great qualities of Gaura-Govinda Swami Maharaj, that from the foundation and basis of Srila Prabhupada's books and purports, he would draw out and share so many wonderful gems because of his familiarity with all these Goswami granthas. As Pundarik Prabhu said, he would sit in his cottage. He went there in 74 or 5 and he stayed there for 20 years, translating books, all the books into Arian, all the Prabhupada's books. So deeply studied. And when he gave class like a school teacher. Because he was a school teacher and he retired at the age of 46. He was searching for a guru and he went to Hardwar and Rishikesh. He tells his story, and his disciples know it quite well. He was searching everywhere, then he thought, when he was in Hardwar, they said, "Oh, you want a guru, you want to worship Govinda, you have to go to Vrindavan. You can find Govinda in Vrindavan." So he came to Vrindavan, he was looking, and he came here and met Prabhupada. Prabhupada was in his house here. They met Prabhupada in his house. And then at that time, he surrendered to Srila Prabhupada. But when he would give class, it would be just like a school teacher, because he would, next to the Vyasasana, he would pile about 6 or 8 notebooks. As Pundarik was saying, he was reading about chanting Hare Krishna is the only medicine we need. We don't need anything else. And he cited so many Shastic references to support that point. He would give class, he would pile all of his notebooks, and he would say, just like Bhaktivinoda Thakur says, and then he would read some prayer, and then the Bhagavatam, and Rupa Goswami. And this way, what happened is, that he created within his disciples, and also within his godbrothers who witnessed this, an intense desire to want to deeply study the scriptures, and to speak on the authority of scripture. As Srila Prabhupada often trained us, we should speak like a lawyer. Whenever we speak transcendental philosophy, we should cite the reference, the slokas, the verses, the stories from the Shastra. We spoke in a very wonderful way. And we can understand by the content of a person's speech, what is that person always speaking about, and what are they always sharing with us, what is it actually the position of their heart. The one theme that comes out of the life and teachings of Gaura-Govinda Swami is the theme of Krishna Prema. He was always speaking about Krishna Prema, writing about Krishna Prema. In fact, we see that his very personality was he was full of joy and happiness. Very, very joyful person. We spent about a week in his temple last summer, around Rathiyatra time, and we went in to see him once for darshan. He said, "Maharaj, we just read your book, this Amrutara Tarangini." Amrut, this is a Korean style, Amrut, Krishna. So the flow of nectar. So I said, "On the front we have Krishna, this is your family deity for 200 years, your Gopinath, your worshipable deity in your family. On the front cover we have this beautiful deity of Krishna, he's smiling and his head is tilted so beautifully, and he has this little bamboo flute or metal flute, whatever, and he's smiling. So we have Krishna on the back, and then we have Krishna Das on the Krishna on the front and Krishna Das on the back, because in the back you look just like Krishna. You're smiling so wonderfully, and your head is tilted to the side, and you have your bamboo cane instead of your bamboo flute." I said, you look just like Krishna. Back cover, you're smiling. And he laughed and said, "That is your vision. You are saying that." But actually, that was his humility to say, that is my vision. But actually, that's the vision of any non-envious person, could see the personality and life of Gaura Govinda Swami and see that he was actually a person full of prema, full of Krishna prema. Because anyone can speak about a particular subject, but their speaking will not have any power unless they realize it. Their speaking will not have any penetration unless they're seeing what they're speaking. And their speaking will not have any lasting effect unless they're living the thoughts that they're sharing, unless they're living the life they're talking about. So we want to close just by reading some excerpts from his one of his writings, where he discusses about two quotations. First, we want to read this quote where he's discussing about prema, because he's saying, his article is called Vraja Prema in the Bhagavad Gita, and he's giving a very wonderful commentary on the, I think it's 630, Yomam Pashati Sarvata Saram Samin Pashati. One who sees me everywhere and sees everything in me. I think it's chapter 6 in Bhagavad Gita, text 30. So in the context of his discussion, he speaks like this, and believe me. First he cites a quotation from Chaitanya Charitamrita, Madhya Lila, chapter 25, 127. Kaviraj Goswami quotes Krishna's own words. Bhaktama prema bandhi yati hridaya dhitaya jahan nature pari tahan dekaye amaye. Quote. That prema bhakta has bound me up in his heart with the rope of love. Wherever he looks, he sees me. That's the end of the verse. Now, Gaura Govinda Swami's first words. This verse tells us, who can see Krishna everywhere? Yomam Pashyati Sarvatra. One has developed such love, Bhakta Ama Prema. He can bind Krishna up in his heart with the rope of love. Wherever such a devotee looks, he sees, oh yes, Krishna is there. Kamasundara is there. And that is what Prahlad Maharaj saw. But unless you are endowed with such vision, how can you see Krishna? It is a question of love, Premanjana Purita. It is said here, nor does a devotee ever lose sight of the Lord. That's Bhagavad Gita, says one who sees Krishna everywhere and sees everything in him, he is never lost to the Lord, and the Lord is never lost to him, he never loses sight. This is the stage of complete Krishna consciousness. And is the highest level of Krishna consciousness, complete blossoming consciousness. It is a question of love. If you can develop such love, then a stupid mind, another phrase you would often use when he was lecturing, you would say, do you understand my language? He'd be lecturing, and it was very clear English, we would understand the tone and dictum and everything in his language. But then he would be speaking in his philosophical terms and would pause and say, do you understand my language? So he's saying, the stupid mind. If we can try to see Krishna everywhere, then, what he's saying here, then the stupid mind can think of Krishna. But instead, we have developed love and affection towards the body and bodily relations, wife, son, and daughter. Therefore, the stupid mind thinks of wife, son, and daughter. Sita, Nita, Ramani, Ratinka. But Krishna is the only object of love. And if you develop such pure love, then the stupid mind can think of Krishna. Then you cannot for a moment live without thinking of Krishna. Because he has become the object of your love. This is love, and that is what is mentioned here. Without love, there is no question of surrender, and no question of man-mana bhavamad bhakto, thinking of Krishna day and night. So this is what Krishna says. Another few minutes, I'll be. And he explains how, after 60,000 years of meditation, Vishwamitra Muni still could not develop Krishna prema, and thus he became attracted towards Cupid, that ugly witch. So those who practice sadhana for many, many millions of lives, they cannot develop Krishna prema. Because Krishna prema is Golokera Premadana, Chinmaya Vastu. It is transcendental, not material. It is inconceivable, akin to tattva. That is prema, and that must be understood. The Gaudiya Vaishnavas, the dear devotees of Mahaprabhu, have called this prema the Paratattva, the supreme truth. The The Paratattva is Krishna, and he is the object of prema, love. And Srila Prabhupada, in his purport, he says, quote, this is Prabhupada's purport, "The whole world exists on Krishna consciousness. That means that the world exists on the basis of love, or prema. This world exists on prema, according to the Sufi mantra. It has come from prema, ananda, transcendental pleasure. And this world continues only on the basis of prema. The goal of prema is sadhyavastu. Our marching is towards prema. If you are not marching towards prema, then you will glide down towards hell. This is what the Sufi mantra, the Vedas, and all the Gaudiya Vaishnavacharyas are saying. The last limit of ananda, or ultimate pleasure, is prema. And it is manifested between the loving bondage of the lover and the beloved, the premaka and the premaka, premaki. And Ujjala Nilamani, Rupa Goswami, our authority, he says that prema is this. Yad bhava bhandanam, you know, the prema parityakita. Bondage in a loving mood is prema. And that bhava bhandanam, that bondage in love, is eternal and is immortal. And it's always young and fresh, and it never grows old. This is prema. Although you may see that apparently it is annihilated, but still it is not annihilated. Prabhupada said in his purport, an intimate relationship between the Lord and the devotee then exists, and that stage, the living energy, will never be annihilated. So in this quote from one article, Brother Prema and Bhagavad Gita, Bhagavad Swami Maharaj is indicating the direction and goal of all Gaudiya Vaishnavas, especially reminding us as his god brothers or his followers or disciples, that this is the be all and the end all of our life. The sum and substance of the life of a devotee is to attain Krishna prema and go back home to the eternal service of Gaura and Govinda. And he lived that life. He was born in a family of devotees, and he knew hundreds and hundreds of bhajans. Whenever he would give lecture, another point about his lectures in Bhuvaneswar, he would give about two and a half hour Bhagavatam classes every day. We went there to hear his lectures, and after he was there about 4 days, about 8 o'clock at night, the night before he had to go somewhere to some project, preaching project, a disciple came and said, "Oh, Maharaj is leaving tomorrow. He wants you to give class." And we thought, how is it possible? This is a hard act to follow, 2.5 hour Bhagavatam class. I thought, I came here to hear from him. I didn't come to have nothing to say. But somehow or other, we spoke the next day, and by the arrangement of the schedule, 2.5 hours went by. He trained up his devotees as Shravanam. He says, Shravana Das, everything is based on hearing. We want to take some lessons from Lord Govinda Swami Maharaj to increase our hearing more and more and more. So much he was stressing hearing Srimad Bhagavatam, and so much he was driving into the hearts and minds of his disciples and followers the need for Krishna prema. And we can see that such a joyful personality he was, that his joy was not coming from the body. His happiness was not coming from relationships in this world. His ecstasy and his pleasure was not coming from any kind of object of this material world. His joy, his pleasure, and his ecstasy was coming from his eternal relationship with Gaura and Govinda. And he was such a personality. So we, as our god brothers have said, we lament the loss, but we take shelter and we take encouragement and we take strength from such a powerful Premaka Bhakta, using his terminology, Premaka Bhakta. We take strength and encouragement and shelter from such a devotee as Gaura Govinda Swami, so that we too, in some future life, can also attain Gaura Govinda Prem. Sri Gaura Govinda Swami Maharaj Ki.
Vasudevaya, Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya, Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya, Nasya Preshu Badhreshu Nityam Bhagavata Sevaya, Bhagavatyuttama Shroke Bhaktir Bhavati Naishwati Narayanam Namaskritya, Satyasatindyasam Dhoti Ammadiyaya. Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, the 7th chapter, chapter 9, Prahlad Maharaj pacifies the Lord with prayer. Text 19. Balasya nehasaranam. Balasya nehasaranam bhikadana sinha. Nāsasya tadgadam idandati madgato no. Dāsasya tad patiridya yahi han handu seshtas. Dāvad jibotanu pitam turupekshitanam. Balasya. Little child, na, not, iha, in this world, saranam, shelter, or protection, pitaro, father and mother, nisinha, oh my lord nisinha, na, neither, Artasya, a person suffering from some disease. Sa, also. Agadam, medicine. Udandati, in the water of the ocean. Madhata, person who is drowning. No, boat. Saptasya, a person suffering from a condition of material misery. Satpatiriji, the counteraction invented for stopping the suffering of material existence. Ya, that which. Iha, in its material world. Andasa, very easily. Istaha, accepted as a remedy. Savat, similarly. Divo, my lord. Sanubritam, living entities who have accepted material bodies. But upekshitanam, who are neglected by you and not accepted by you. Translation purport by Srila Prabhupada. My Lord Nrsimhadev, O Supreme, because of a bodily conception of life, embodied souls neglected and not cared for by you cannot do anything for their betterment. Whatever remedies they accept, although perhaps temporarily beneficial, are certainly impermanent. For example, a mother and father cannot protect their child. A physician in medicine cannot relieve a suffering patient. And a boat on an ocean cannot protect a drowning man. Om Anjana Chinarandasya. Janamjana Surakaya Chakshuramilitam Yena Tasmai Sri Guravai Namaha Mulkam Karoti Vasavam Pangam Vande Te Gurum Yakripatamaham Vande Sri Gurum Vinakaranam Paramananda Madhavam Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhara Sivasari Gaura Bhaktavinda Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Translation again. Balasya neha sananam pitaro nisinha, narsasya kajadam udanbati majito no, satasya katsati vidir yahyam vihanja seishtat, Tadat Jivo Tanu Bikam Tadishek Sitanam. Salad Maharaj prays, my Lord Infinity, O Supreme, because of the bodily conception of life, embodied souls neglected and not cared for by you cannot do anything for their betterment. Whatever remedies they accept, although perhaps temporarily beneficial, are certainly impermanent. For example, a mother and father cannot protect their child. A physician in medicine cannot relieve a suffering patient. And a boat on the ocean cannot save a drowning man. In the outline of the Bhagavatam, this verse Prabhupada mentions, scientists and politicians can never save us. In the material world, everyone is struggling very hard to be saved. One of the principles of material existence is to continue our existence. No one wants to die. So every living entity, from the bird or the insect, what to speak of the human beings, are making elaborate arrangements to protect themselves from finality, or protect themselves from annihilation, protect themselves from death. And in the human species, this protection takes a very complex form. We try to protect ourselves in so many ways. And Prahlad Maharaj, a little 5-year-old boy, he's very logically presenting the fallacy of material protection. And in his own way, he's giving preachers a very nice argument. Prabhupada often uses this. Because the materialist, the first person who doesn't say himself as the Lord and depend fully on the Lord's protection, he's depending on something. Everyone is depending on something. Because everyone understands, at least an intelligent person will understand that I'm very, very tiny. It's a very, very dangerous world. This world is full of fearful situations. So I have to take shelter. I have to depend on something or someone to protect me. What they take shelter in is the material energy itself, which is the source of their fear. They're afraid of the material world. They're afraid of death. They're afraid of disease. They're afraid of old age. And these are byproducts of the material world. But yet, to find shelter from these fears that are created by the material world, they seek protection in the material world itself. It doesn't make much sense, but this is their idea. In other words, they're afraid of disease, so they take shelter of the physician. So Prahlad Maharaj, in a very accurate way, he's breaking apart all the basic means of protection of the whole material world. He's saying, oh, disease. Disease is a fear. People are afraid of disease. Oh, we have our doctors. We have our medicine. Just like in the field of medicine, they have so many anti-medicines, anti-stress medicine, anti-cancer medicine, antibiotics, anti-septic. Everything is anti. Anti means against. In other words, someone is attacking me, and I have to fight back. I have to go against them. So it is anti-stress, so many things you see in the shops, antibiotics, anti-stress, anti-septic. But still, they take all these medicines, anti-stress, but still stress comes. And they take antibiotics and to protect them from infection, and still infection comes. And they're always having to create newer and newer antibiotics. First it was penicillin, then it's ampicillin, and tetracycline, and this cycline, and that cycline. And, Maharaj is saying, myosin. They have these different medicines, and one of them is one's called myosin. Myosin is an antibiotic, but he was making kind of a joke. He's saying, my sin, you can't avoid your sin. You're suffering because of your sin. We suffer disease or mental problems because of our sins from previous life, or our sins, or our papa karma. It comes back to us. It comes against us. It recoils against us. It's a boomerang. Our actions are like a boomerang. You know, you throw up in the air, and then it comes back. So if you do good actions, you get a pat on the back. If you do something good, that reaction comes back, and you get a pat on the back. You get some reward. You get some benefit. You get some blessing. You get some promotion. You get some elevation. You get some enjoyment. This is the result of punya karma, a good thing. But if you throw out bad activities, and the boomerang comes back, you don't get a pat on the back, but you get your head cut off. Because up, zoom, comes back. So this is, and it comes in the form of disease, leprosy, cancer, so many suffering, anxiety, stress, when you try to take your anti-stress medicine. So in their own way, they have so many arrangements to try to find protection. But people in Prabhupada says in the purport, he said, you may, your son is sick, and you're a multi-billionaire, you're a Hinduja, or some very, very rich man, your son becomes sick, and you put him in the best hospital in India, the Hinduja hospital in Bombay, and you call in the best physicians from America, you fly in the best heart surgeons, spend millions of dollars. But even the best physicians and the best medicines, they can't save the life of one who's destined to die. Rake Krishna Marate, Mare Krishna Rake. Right, they say, Rake, Rake, my protector, my Rake. And my brother is not going to protect me. It's like in India, they have some custom, they tie the sisters, they tie the brothers with some Rake, isn't it? Rake Purnima. This is also Balaram Purnima, right? It's the same. And the appearance of Lord Balaram, who is the source of strength, he's the real source of protection. He's the real source of strength. Balaram. Joy and protection. Ram means Raman. Raman means satisfaction. By taking shelter of Krishna, by taking shelter of Krishna and Balaram, we become very peaceful and satisfied, and we receive protection in all directions. And protection through all dimensions of time, past, present, and future. This is Balaram. So this is a real big brother. He's the brother of Krishna. And when Krishna is going out in the morning to the pasturing grounds, his mother, she's saying, look, Balaram, you're Dauji. Oh, Dauji, you're the older brother. You have to protect your little brother. He doesn't know better. He gets so absorbed in playing, he forgets himself. He's rolling on the banks of the moon, he's chasing after the cows, he's jumping in the water, he's jumping up in the trees, he's wrestling with his friends. And he loses himself in playing, and sometimes he comes back and there's all bruises and red marks all over him. You have to look after him. And sometimes, even though I send out a nice tiffin with him, nice tiffin full of kachori, jalebi, sandesh, burfi, puri, sabji, all nice things, to take some snacks when he's out cowherding. But when he's so much playing that he forgets to eat. And I'm afraid if he doesn't eat, he'll become very weak and he won't grow properly. So you're the older brother, you have to look out for him. You have to protect him. And the other thing is if Kamsa sends his men, if his hood, as Prabhupada said, if his hood come, hood means his dacoits, his gundas, his bad people, if they come and try to catch my little boy, immediately you run from that place and you come back here. So this is the real big brother, is Balaram. Even Mother Yashoda is taking shelter in Dauji. Oh, Balaram, protect Krishna. So this Rakhi Purnima, the sisters in India are tying their brothers with a little band, a little decorative band. Oh, please, you protect me. But what is that protection? Because the family cannot protect us. This is what first we're talking about the medicines and doctors because we're afraid of disease or we're afraid of death. So we think, oh, my family will protect me, my community will protect me, or the scientists will protect me, as Prabhupada said, the outline of this verse, the politicians and scientists cannot give any protection. The politicians are promising that if you elect me, I will give you protection. If you elect me, I will protect you. How will I protect you? There'll be no more gundas in the streets, there'll be no more dacoits, right? People are harassed. In the modern age, people are harassed by terrorism, buses blowing up, bus stations blowing up, buildings blowing up, airplanes blowing up, everything's blowing up. So the politicians say, oh, if you elect me, no more terrorism. No more jackrabbits, no more robberies, thieving. So people, oh yes, I have faith in the Congress I have faith in the BGITXYZ, whatever party there is. And if I elect them, surely they will protect me. But the Bhagavatam says that these politicians, this family, these are fallible soldiers. Fallible soldiers means they fail. At the time of need, they fail. When death comes for you, you can call out for the National Guard, you can call out for the Indian Air Force, you can call out for everyone, you can call out for the Prime Minister. Oh, Prime Minister, save me. Oh, my beloved MP, my LNPM, save me. Death is coming. And then no reply. They cannot save you. And when the dacoits come to rob you, say, wait a minute, you're not supposed to be here. I elected this politician, he's supposed to protect me. Why are you robbing my house? You can't stop them. So this is, Prahlad Maharaj is saying that you can make all kinds of elaborate material arrangements to protect you from disease, your physicians, your medicines, or your family, or what are the other ones he says? He says, even a boat on the ocean cannot save a drowning man. Sometimes you're in the ocean, you hear people are drowning, they see a boat is coming, and they're waving their hands, help, help, save me. And there's thousands of people on the boat, and they just ride right by. They don't hear them, because the boat makes a lot of noise, boom, 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 boom. The engine is going, and when a person is in the ocean, in the middle of the Atlantic Ocean, a person is there, he looks about as big as an ant. If you went up on the top of the roof and saw an ant on the ground, how small it would look. When you're on an ocean liner, these ocean liners are very high. An ocean liner from the top deck, it's like something like 300 feet down to the water. It's very, very high. It's a long way. You can't see someone in the ocean. Their head looks like a little tiny coconut floating in the ocean. The person's waving. First, a boat can come right by you, 5 meters away from you when you're in the ocean. Help, help. If your destiny is to drown, you know, boat will go right by. So there's no real protection in this world for anyone. But under this illusion, we think scientists, politicians, or when we were young, we remember when we first understood that actually there's something called death. We saw maybe our dog die or something like that, a pet dog or something. Some animal died. Then we started to understand, what is this death? It's like Lord Buddha. When Lord Buddha was living in the palace, and his palace, his father didn't want him to see any of the miseries of the material world. He grew up, he was born with a golden spoon in his mouth, he was a prince, and, you know, very, you know, opulent setting. So his father, he didn't want Buddha to understand that this, the reality of this world is janma, mrityu, jara, vyadhi, birth, old age, disease, and death. This is the reality. So much suffering, and so many anti-things are coming to, so many aggressors are coming, old age and disease. So his father said, well, you just stay in the palace. And so inside the walls of the palace, no one was allowed to die. If anyone was about to die, they would be taken outside the palace. There's no old people in there. There's no diseased people in there. So he didn't see anything. He didn't see any janma, mrityu, jara, vyadhi. He didn't see any of that. He saw all nicely decorated people walking around smiling. Oh, hello, how are you? I'm fine, how are you? Just like nowadays, you go down in the city. Oh, Mr. Goyle, how are you? Oh, I'm quite fine, how are you? I'm very fine. Next day, Mr. Goyle dropped dead. How is that? Oh, what happened to Mr. Goyle? Oh, I don't know. He was fine yesterday. He's dead today. So then, one day, Buddha said to one minister, he said, I want to go outside the walls of the palace and take a walk around. Walk around my father's kingdom and see what is out there. So he went outside and he walked down the road and he saw a man lying on the road. Man is lying. Buddha, what is that? What is that? What is with this man? And then the minister said, you don't understand, he's dying. He's an old man, he's dying, he's breathing his last breath, he's suffering, and he's about to die. Die? What is death? What is this death? So the minister started explaining. Well, you know, you take birth, but when I was born, death is certain. Death is born with your, when you take this body, death is like with you. It's just a matter of time. So then they went a little further, and they saw a man walking with a crutch, and he had one leg. And Buddha said, what's this? What happened to this person? Oh, he has one leg. Oh, yeah, this disease person. He had some leprosy, the leg fell off, and so this is disease. Another, this is also going on in this world, so much disease. Really? So when he saw that, then he decided, oh, this world is a very bad world. It's a very dangerous world. I better just dedicate my life to God. And then he just left, and he went on, developed his, become self-realized and all the whole thing. So this is the reality of the world. There's no protection from these things. And we see this story itself and throughout the Vedic literature that the only protection is the Lord himself. Even if one is a very, very powerful hero or powerful warrior, worshipping demigods, even a demigod can't give protection
We've seen the case of Ravana. Ravana was so powerful that he had controlled the whole universe. All the demigods were afraid of him, practically all. He was a devotee of Lord Shiva. So when he was fighting Ramachandra in Lanka, he was getting severely repulsed, and he started praying to Lord Shiva, "Lord Shiva, please help me. You've never failed me before. I've been able to conquer and defeat and eliminate so many powerful heroes, and now my arms are weakening, and my strength is fading, and and my weapons are not working. This Ramachandra seems invincible. Please help me." And he's praying and praying. And Lord Shiva was not paying any attention. Lord Shiva was sitting there under the Hariram. He's always chanting the name of Ram, meditating on Sankirtana. So then he's praying, "Please, Shiva, please, I've done so much puja," because when Ravana was doing his worship of Lord Shiva to get his power, "Jai Radha Patasarki Bhagavan." When Ravana was worshipping Lord Shiva to get power, he came to the one point where he was going to cut his head off and offer his head. And then Lord Shiva reciprocated with him. He was so sincere, so dedicated, "Oh, right now offer my head." He was about to cut his head and offer it in the fire of sacrifice to Lord Shiva. Very dedicated, devoted Lord Shiva. So then Parvati, when she saw, because Parvati is softer than Lord Shiva, soft side, feminine side. So she went to Lord Shiva, "Look, how can you ignore your devotee? How can you neglect him?" That's what Prahlad Maharaj is saying here. He's saying to Lord Nisinghadev, "My Lord, if you neglect someone, there is no hope for them. There's no hope for them. If you neglect them and ignore someone, they can't be protected or continue for a second." So he said, "Rakhi Krishna Marathi, Marathi Krishna Rakhi. If Krishna protects you, Rakhi, if you have Krishna's Rakhi, your Balaram's Rakhi, if you have that, if you're bound, if you're tied, heart and soul, mind and life, to the lotus feet of Balaram, we should tie ourselves there. When our sister comes to tie our wrist, we should say, 'No, wait, sister.'" "Mind you, my dear sister, don't tie my wrist. Let's both of us, you and I, go to the temple and tie ourselves to Balaram. Let's go to Vrindavan on this holy day of his appearance, on this Dauji Purnima, Balaram Purnima. Let's go to Balaram and let's tie our wrist to him." So, Rakhi Krishna Marate. Mara means death. Mara, Mara, Mara. This is Mrityaloka, Maya. This is Mrityaloka, the planet of death. So we tie ourselves. Krishna protects us, no one can kill us. So Parvati, she's softer, but she's saying, she's pouring on Lord Shiva, "Shiva, please, don't you see Ravana, your great devotee? She's in an perilous condition. She's about to be vanquished." And so she went there herself to try to do something. She couldn't do anything. Shiva couldn't do anything. Parvati couldn't do anything. And Durga herself, she cannot, the whole material energy personified Durga, she cannot protect, although she has 10 arms. She rides on a tiger, and she has 10 arms to give protection, and so many powerful weapons, she can annihilate anyone. If she wants, if you're a Mars, you're a devotee of Ma Shakti or Durga, she can annihilate anyone with her 10 arms. But she could do nothing against Ram, because Ravana's fate was sealed. He was finished. They couldn't be protected. And then, throughout the Vedic literature, there's no chance. But of course, the Acharyas explain an interesting concept. Parichanaya sarunam vinashaya tadishtitam. Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, Parichanaya sarunam vinashaya tadishtitam. He says, Parichanaya sarunam. For my sadhu, for my devotees, for my dedicated souls, I protect them. Vinashaya tadishtitam. But for the duskriti, for the demons, the non-devotees, I vinashaya. I finish them. I eliminate them. But actually, the Acharyas explain that Krishna is so wonderful and kind that he's protecting everyone. Because factually speaking, Krishna is protecting everyone, the demons and devotees alike. He's taking your medicines and your doctors and your politicians. The medicine is not protecting you, the politicians. Krishna's protecting everyone, according to a lot of times. But as soon as a person offends a devotee, if someone offends a devotee, or offends the Lord himself, immediately, he's finished. Whatever his destiny is, it's reduced. He's destined to live 100 years, but he offends a Vaishnava or offends the Lord, then he's finished for 10 years or 20 years. So this verse, the Sai is explaining, although the Lord always comes to protect his devotees, and there's hundreds and thousands of examples throughout the Shastras. This is an example here, Prahlad Maharaj. Hiranyakashipu, he's coming to kill him in so many ways, hundreds of ways he tried to kill and annihilate him. But he could not annihilate him. If Nrisimhadev came, Krishna came, protect his devotees. Parijanaya Sarunam. So when Krishna comes, he protects the devotees and he protects the demons also. How does he protect the demons? Because when he kills the demons, that's how he protects them. Because when Krishna personally comes and kills demons, they get liberated. They immediately get liberated, which is a position, which is a fortune, or promotion, or destiny that a demon could not attain for thousands and thousands of births. Liberation requires spiritual practices. You have to practice so much Jnana Yoga or Asanga Yoga, so much tapasya and piety and religious activities one must perform to attain mukti, the various forms of mukti. But a demon can get that immediately by being liberated by the Lord. So he protects them, gives them such fortune. He protects them from future births in a hellish. Because they're demons, if they were not killed by the Lord, they'd have to suffer thousands of births in animal species and lower species because of their demoniac activities, because of their sins perpetrated against devotees, because of their basic immorality, being a demon, so much sin. So they have to suffer thousands of births. So Krishna protects them from all that by killing them. This is very merciful. So some people will say that if Krishna is protecting everyone, no one even can continue to exist one day. No one, devotee or non-devotee, no person can live for one day without being protected by the Lord. So someone might say, well, why bother becoming a devotee? Why bother becoming a devotee? Because you're protected anyway. No reason to become a devotee. Everyone's protected. But the point is that Krishna himself, although he is the protector of everyone, he mentions in Bhagavad Gita, thank you.